go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, this thing's working again. The second program in a row. Yay! You know, this is kind of interesting because we know the internet problems that we had with a former cable company, which shall go nameless. But it's kind of an indication of where the world is headed that we went from service that was 5 megs down and 1 meg up and was a constant source of irritation to a service that is wirelessly delivered and is 20 megs down and 10 megs up. This is considerably better connection than what we had before, so yay! It is the 8th day of September 2014. This program is live, and hopefully we won't have the interruptions that we had last week. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go to jump into the chat room, which folks are already jumping into even as we speak. Good evening, Kathy. Good evening, M. Brandt. Good evening, Texas T. And good evening, Waggy. And good evening to our longtime veteran chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Sparky back from a much-deserved long weekends, rest and gadabout. Saw some photos earlier of Northern California. My God, that's beautiful country up there. Oh, heavenly days. Thanks for sending the photos along, Sparky. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is also where you go for the Listen Live player, unless you're listening on some sort of iDevice or smart device or Android this or what have you, in which case we recommend the apps from TuneIn and Stitcher. And, what was it? Ootune? That we were told about the other night? So, lots of different alternatives. Thank you, Randy. Loud and clear on iTunes on my Mac, Bob. Good. Good to know. Thank you. And, well, it's also HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. It's also the home of the PayPal button. And that's how we keep all of this going. Each and every instance of the program. We try to raise about $150 per evening. And, of course, we ended last week in a bit of a shortfall because of all the technical nightmares that last week was. I mean, we were getting some, by the end of the week, we were getting some real dirty looks from the Cabana Boy and the pool skimmer. And the nasty notes from the company that rents us the hangar for the Horn Gulfstream 5 had to go another week before we finished paying off the rims for the Maybach. Yeah. Oh, well, Agnes's masseur was positively implacable. But thanks go out to a lot of folks for helping us fill in that hole that got dug technologically last week. Thanks going out to Joyce and Leo. Thanks going out to Sandra. Thanks going out to Richard. Thanks to Jerry. Thanks to Michael. And thanks this evening to our buddy Greg in San Diego. Greg, of course, is also the moderator of the Malloy chat room. Thank you, Greg, for putting forward a $50 challenge to help us take care of this evening's fundraising. Greg's got $50 out there that he is willing to put forward to match the first 50 that come in, taking care of the first two-thirds of the evening's fundraising. Thank you very much, Greg. So, you know, your 5 becomes 10, your 20 becomes 40, your 25 becomes 50, and your 50 becomes 100, up to the first 50 bucks that come in this evening. So hopefully that'll happen sooner rather than later, and there won't be a lot of palaver about fundraising during the rest of the evening. Because I don't like doing it. I'd rather go into the material. And plenty of material there, by God, is this evening. Because after all, oh, yeah, you did. No, I haven't been. No, the schedule didn't get so squirreled up that I don't know what day it is. No, I know what day it is. I darned well know what day it is.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, step right up. You will not believe your ears. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, you will hear Morans of indescribable Moranity. Right-wing Morans, Republican Morans, Libertarian Morans, Bircher Morans, Bagger Morans, Deather Morans, Booger-Eaten Morans, Morans, one and all. Yes, indeed, you can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Oh, my goodness gracious, for less than 5 cents an hour of programming, well, golly gee, there's not much better broadcasting along the midway here, and we encourage you all to participate. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, God, and it has never been more true than what it is today. Remember when the only video there was of Ray Rice was of him sort of caveman-like, and this is probably going kind of rough on the caveman, really, because the caveman imagery was always created by industrialist, you know, modern world animators, but the caveman image of Ray Rice dragging his unconscious significant other out of an elevator by her hair. And the NFL said, "Oh, my stars and garters, he did what? Well, we're going to give him a 2-game suspension for dragging his unconscious significant other around by her hair. Granted, that's less than we would impose on someone for smoking cannabis, which has never been shown to make anyone want to drag anybody by their anything anywhere. Mostly it just makes them hungry for Doritos."
Yeah, we all remember that. So, the NFL was okay with that 2-game suspension as long as there wasn't any video out there showing him actually punching the living bejesus out of Janae Palmer. Right. They had, back during May, they had a press conference, and Janae Palmer stepped to the microphone and said, the argument turned violent, and then in an instance of self-deprecation of the highest order, said that she deeply, quote, regretted the role that she played on the night of the incident. That's kind of like when after a kid gets bullied on the way home from the schoolyard, the kid said, "I'm sorry my face got in the way of your fist. Oopsie." Video came out of how it was that Janae Palmer wound up on the floor of said elevator where she could be dragged out by her hair. Mm-hmm. Now, this is all after a plea deal. This happened in Atlantic City, New Jersey. This is all after a plea deal that for what's called pretrial diversion, which means that if you do what you're supposed to do, then you don't wind up with a criminal rap sheet for, you know, beating up your significant other who then became your spouse. It was he was charged, Ray Rice was, with third-degree sexual assault. I mean, I'm sorry, third-degree aggravated assault. We regret the error. Third-degree aggravated assault. And in New Jersey, apparently, if one has some degree of privilege, like being a multimillionaire football player, then that means you get to a year, go to a year-long domestic violence program, and you don't get arrested again. As long as you don't get arrested again while you're going to the year-long domestic violence program. And then the charges are dismissed. And you don't have a rap sheet for dragging a woman around by her hair or knocking her unconscious so that you can then drag her around by her hair. Because there aren't many people on this earth who will willingly allow themselves to be dragged around by their hair. Unconscious is really the key to that whole program. However, by the offices of TMZ, the video went public of how it was that Janae Palmer wound up on the floor of that elevator. And, wow. Ray Rice apparently has the ability to make people unconscious with a single blow. Because he slobber knocks Janae Palmer in the video. Her head whacks against the elevator wall, and then, well, and then she can be dragged out of the elevator by her hair. Now, what's interesting in all of this, going back to the NFL's original response to this, is that according to TMZ, the NFL had access to the video. Nobody else did, but the NFL did when they imposed the less harsh than the penalty they impose on players who smoke cannabis penalty on Ray Rice for, you know, dragging his soon-to-be wife around out of the elevator. Yeah. Now, I don't have anything here showing the NFL response saying, "Oh, heavens, Betsy, no, we had no, we didn't see him sucker punch her." But it's, yeah, I don't know, if I was a betting man, I'd bet it was true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now, having been with the public knowing what the NFL knew when they imposed their two-day suspension, the NFL has now taken action against Ray Rice. What? Even though, well, this is... It sort of smacks of, oh, well, you caught me. And no, it's not the NFL. No. No, it's the Baltimore Ravens. Yeah. The Ravens have released Ray Rice from their football squad. So I guess we are to take from this that while TMZ says that the NFL knew what happened, that the Baltimore Ravens didn't? All of this happened back in February, and it's still developing in September. And meanwhile, yes, the NFL is hollering. Our buddy Marty gets the credit for this opening nomination on this More In Monday. I'm still having a hard time figuring out who exactly the More In is. It's not Janae Palmer. Maybe it's us, because we were right there turning on the TV sets yesterday for season launching Sunday in the NFL, weren't we? Yes, we were. based on what the NFL and Roger Goodell are calling the new video evidence, they are suspending indefinitely Ray Rice. And the Ravens have released him from their roster. NFL spokesman Greg Aiello said this morning, "We requested from law enforcement any and all information about the incident, including the video from inside the elevator. That video was not made available to us, and no one in our office has seen it until today." And in a desperate attempt to sort of get the egg off of his face, Roger Goodell had also earlier said, "When we're going through the process of evaluating the issue and whether there will be discipline, you look at all of the facts that you have available to us." You do to us. Law enforcement normally has more information and facts than we have. We'll get as much as we possibly can. So in other words, the NFL is now claiming, that TMZ has more powers of acquisition than the NFL does. "We're just a humble nonprofit organization, a very small multi-billion-dollar organization, tax exempt and everything. I mean, but we couldn't possibly, we wouldn't even have begun to know where to look for that video of Ray Rice knocking the slobber out of Jhené Palmer. We had no idea. Those TMZ people are like magic."
Yeah. I think we're the nominees. We're supposed to believe that crap.
No, really. Yeah. Steve with a note. Subject line, Ray Rice / Michael Sam. "Why do I think that this Ray Rice kerfuffle would never have happened had the NFL not laid their extreme homophobia?" I think we've got a word missing or something there. I do these things on the fly. I think I know what Steve's getting at. And it didn't take long. I used the phrase powers of acquisition, and there was Steve. Powers of acquisition, yes, but the Ferengi have the most. Ka-ching, obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. Ron and Raleigh with a question. "Did you happen to hear any of the right-wing Christian coaches that raised all the hoo-ha about Michael Sam being gay mention this incident? Gay bad, domestic violence, not so much." Ah, yeah, that domestic violence, it's hardwired into our DNA, right? I mean, we can't rise above our essential chemical. Rumpf. But this is More In Monday, and sometimes our More In stories are onions. I don't mean they come from the onion. I mean they have multiple layers. And thus, you know, you peel one layer that's making you cry, and there's another layer making you cry, and it's just crying. Right. And so there is absolutely no, and Marty's also responsible for this one, there is absolutely no getting around who the nominees are in this instance. Oh, no, this one's kind of obvious. Now, you know, yesterday, and this is an aside, you know that yesterday was the first day of the shiny new Meet the Prestitutes with shiny new host Chuck Todd, who cannot at any point in time be referred to as liberal, because, you know, you can't have any decidedly liberal people out there on Meet the Prestitutes, because that's an important journalistic undertaking that its credibility would be completely undermined in the undertaking by having some liberal. Right.
So that's how, you know, that's how you wind up with David Gregory out there dancing around with MC Rove, because you wouldn't want anybody thinking that David Gregory was a liberal. Because liberals just ruin everything. So Chuck Todd's the new host. And having gotten a promotion, Joe Scarborough. I got to apologize because there's some sort of upper respiratory thing going around. Nose is running like a sugar tree. Sneezing, I mean, that just comes on. Okay, all better. Joe Scarborough is going to be a contributor, the contributing editor or reporter or contributing panjandrum or something to Meet the Press now, because, you know, we can't have any liberals, goddamn them, ruining the journalistic integrity of Meet the Press. No, of course not. Of course not. We can't have that. Because, you see, there's this wildly popular trope out there among right-wingers these days that MSNBC and Fox are exactly the same, only polar opposites. They're just like the two ends of a magnet. Right? I mean, every lousy, rotten, tawdry, filthy thing that Fox News TV Radio Rwanda does, there is an exact correlating example at MSNBC, only there isn't. So, you know, MSNBC is a goddamn bunch of liberals with on television. It's appalling, I tell you. Jesus Christ. I mean, liberals everywhere. I mean, you got that liberal Chris Matthews, and you got that liberal Rachel Maddow, and you got that liberal Chris Hayes, and that liberal Lawrence O'Donnell, and you got that liberal Al Sharpton, and you got that liberal Joe Scarborough, who gets the most prime piece of real estate in broadcasted the morning slot. That liberal Joe. No, wait. Liberal Joe Scarborough? Did I miss the memo? Because he ain't. And see, Joe Scarborough, all by his law... it's going to be a long program. Joe Scarborough, by virtue of his mere... tingling. Clistonis! Joe Scarborough, by his mere presence in the most choice piece of real estate, that morning slot, disproves the whole right-wing trope about they're the exactly the same, only polar opposites. That's just a line of horseshit. Joe Scarborough is no more Midland, is no more neutral, is no more an objective journalist than I am the czar of all the Russias. Or the king of Siam. No. Because over at Fox, their entire broadcast day is nothing but putrid right-wing vomit from start to finish. And it just so happens that we have proof of that in the form of Brian Kilmeade and Steve Doocy and Elizabeth Hasselbeck sitting there on their tall stools this morning. Yes. Talking about this very thing, the Ray Rice controversy. And as we've proven by the first 15 minutes of the program or so here, with me just sort of yammering merrily along, there are several angles by which one may approach the Ray Rice NFL violence off the field problem. You can question whether or not the NFL knew or had reason to know or should have known what went on inside the actual elevator before levying a 2-game suspension. Or if their actions are merely the actions of an organization, not for profit, mind you, billions of dollars, not for profit, that happened to get caught and needed to quickly remove. And this is one of those language examination moments. Where does the notion of get the egg off one's face come from? And I don't know this for certain. I just think about language sometimes. By no means am I William Sapphire, that noble Nixon speechwriter who constantly dissected the English language. But one, I don't think it's because somebody passes out in their poached eggs or their scrambled eggs or their omelet. Because you might get up with a few speck, you might come, no, but, you know, you're not going to, no. One gets egg on one's face when one has eggs thrown at one, does one not? And said eggs are not fried or over hard or sunny side up or scrambled, no, they are raw. And they're kind of slickety and drippy and really kind of hard to clean up. You ever cleaned up a raw egg dropped on the floor and broken there? It actually resists the cleaning impulse a little bit because they're kind of slimy. And so when we talk about the NFL trying to get the egg off of its face, yeah, it's not an easy proposition. And how one gets the egg on one's face in the first place is usually by some sort of terrible conduct or awful conduct. But anyway, there's a number of different ways to approach the Ray Rice story. Now, speaking of Ron's earlier note, because this is just too darn precious. Ron asked earlier, did you hear it? You heard it. Have you heard of any of these upstanding, godly, God-fearing, good Christian football coaches who had ever so much to say about Michael Sam, say much of anything in the way of Ray Rice? And it immediately put me in mind of a tweet that I saw yesterday. Isaac and Sandra and I were tweeting back and forth. I'm at Bob Kincaid. Sandra is at Nignog63. And, this was just precious. Tony Dungy, who is one of those God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian football coaches, yesterday apparently tweeted in regard to the Cincinnati-Baltimore game, Cincinnati has been very impressive in the first half versus Baltimore, efficient on offense and shitting out the Ravens. Yes. Efficient on offense and shitting out the Ravens. Such language, Tony Dungy. Yeah. But anyway. So there's all kinds of angles you can work with in the Ray Rice story. I did not get my wish yesterday, by the way, on opening Sunday. I was hoping that the Browns would put in Johnny Manziel and that the Steeler defense would snap him like a dry twig? Which shows that I'm a really bad person. But I can't stand Johnny Manziel. But it didn't happen. But the Steelers won. Barely. Ran the score up on the poor little Brownies. And then had to fight like the very devil to and win with a going away last second field goal to take the game 30-27. Oh well. Didn't get to see the Raiders and the Jets, but I guess West Virginia Mountaineer alum Geno Smith did okay. But anyway, lots of angles with which to approach the Ray Rice story. But leaving all those many angles aside, the folks at Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, just by natural, I guess, ability, found the sleaziest one. We take you now to a clip. From Fox News this morning. You're going to love this. They're discussing, of course, the Ray Rice matter, as many of us are. Right?
Ray Rice of the Ravens, you saw some video from the Revel Hotel in Atlantic City back in February. You saw that where he was dragging his knocked out then girlfriend, now wife, out of the car. Well, now TMZ shows us what happened inside, and it is shocking. Here they're walking in, yeah. And then we cut to the inside camera.
And see, what happened after that is after review, the NFL came out and suspended him for 2 games. He apologized profusely with his wife in a couple of press conferences. Then Roger Goodell, the commissioner, came out and said, I made a huge mistake. It's got to be more severe. It's the wrong message. It's going to be 6 weeks one time, and then a ban for life if you do it again.
Yeah. This is so shocking. It's so unfortunate, too, for the game of football in general that it puts such a black eye on the sport when it's such a great American pastime, right? I mean, from getting you teamwork and accountability and all this.
Golly, Moses, we really understand what the real value that Elizabeth Hasselbeck brings to the discussion, don't we?
Too, for the game of football in general, that it puts such a black eye on the sport when it's such a great American pastime, right? I mean, from getting you teamwork and accountability and all this thing is for kids, but these guys are supposed to be role models, and they're, in some cases, beating up.
We're going to go to that in a minute, I think. These guys are supposed to be role models. But anyway.
Up their girlfriends, and then allowed to play after 2 games.
Yeah, well, this, you know, it's very clear, and this is a little herky-jerky. TMZ kind of cleaned it up to get rid of some jitter. But inside, you can see he hits her first, then she hits him back, and then boom, he just levels her. She hits her head on that rail right there, and then she is out cold, and he got suspended for 2 games.
So is that enough? We asked you that. Here it goes. Don says he had no real consequences. She should have been fired. This sends a bad message to young kids that it's okay to beat up your girlfriend and tell girls to take it, and then nothing will be done.
And a tweet from Joe says, as a Ravens fan, I am disgusted and will not be cheering for him. The NFL and Ravens organization should be in shame as well.
We should also point out, after that video, and now you know what happened in there, she still married him. They're currently married.
I mean, look, Rihanna went back to
Chris
Brown right after. A lot of people thought that was a terrible message.
And then there's Jay-Z and Beyonce and Solange. That was also in an elevator.
But
Really? That's where you go. Chris Brown and Rihanna, that's where you go from and Jay-Z and
What, Edith, huh?
Surely to God there's a message here.
He knows JV didn't hit back.
There was some craziness.
I think the message is take the stairs.
the messages when you're an analyst.
Yeah, that's the message. That's definitely the message. Take the stairs. That's the Brian Kilmeade. But the best part of that message is when Elizabeth Hasselbeck, and you can just barely hear it there. Let's do this right.
So in an elevator.
But he knows JV didn't hit back.
There was some craziness.
I think the message is take the stairs.
The message.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Hasselbeck giggles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She giggled. The message is take the stairs. No, Brian Kilmeade, you goddamned idiot. You moron. The message is not take the stairs, because had they taken the stairs, Bray Rice could have thrown her down them. At which point we would probably be talking about, I don't think that there's a pretrial diversion for murder in the first degree or even heat of passion second degree murder. I don't know, mate. Maybe if you make enough millions of dollars in the NFL. Oh, wait, Ray Lewis. It's a Ray thing. Take the stairs. Yeah. Nothing like tuning in over to Fox and Friends to hear them giggling about not just domestic violence, but domestic violence that winds up in unconsciousness. Holy mackerel. Am I out of bounds in assuming that there is no Department of Network Standards at Fox News? That there's no Department of Morals or Ethics or Broadcast Decency at Fox News, Radio TV Rwanda? I think the message is take the stairs. Maybe we need to clip out little and sort of audio enhance Elizabeth Hasselbeck's. I mean, that I think that's actually more annoying than Peter Griffin's. But it's oh dear. No, maybe we need to clip out that little portion, and what? Make a track out of it, so that every time something awful happens, particularly in the realm of domestic violence, I can just push the little button and we can all hear Elizabeth Hasselbeck say, she almost kind of laughs like George W. Bush, doesn't she? Jesus God. We are going to be so busy this evening. But we did reach, our fundraising goal before the end of the first half hour of the program. So thank you one and all. Thank you to Cindy. And thank you to Elizabeth. And thank you to Jason, and thank you to Sal, and thank you to Asa. We got there. And so consequently, Greg's $50 challenge got met, and then some. So, cool. Wonderful. Thank you. Marty with an email. Tim Hasselbeck actually married that one? This one? Definitely no accounting for taste. Well, yes, there is. Oh, there is. But the Ray Rice story is by no means all that there is to all of this. Oh, no. No, it's a Moran Monday, and that means, well, Moran Monday comes after the weekend, and consequently they sort of pile up after a while. We do Moran Monday on Monday because there's such a profusion of them after Sunday and Saturday. And lots of stuff to work with. Oh, dear me. Lots. Well, something that I ran across, oh, what was it, last night? One of those uniquely American stories. Remember how that phrase came into the current parlance? George W. Bush on some sort of campaign whistle stop or what, up in, I think, in the Twin Cities area of Minnesota. And some woman stood up and said, "President Bush, I work three jobs," at which point he interrupted, "Hey, that's uniquely American." And, of course, not too long back, we had the story of the woman who was working four jobs who managed to get all dead inside of her automobile because she was trying to catch a nap between the between two of her jobs, and the fumes from her emergency supply of gasoline in case she ran out. Because when you're busting your ass and just barely living at subsistence, you do things like you keep an extra can of gas in the car in case you run out, because you may not be able to afford any when you do run out. And you may not be able to afford any to keep you from running out, because this is America, and it's the greatest country in the world. She died, that woman did, in a parking lot, in her car, asphyxiated by gasoline fumes. All kidding aside, there really are sneezing fits going on here. I don't. Is it ragweed season in Appalachia? I don't know. But those extended silences, that's what that is. Anyway, at least this story does not involve anyone dying yet. Story comes up to us out of Western PA. In fact, we may wind up with a sort of Pennsylvania segment this evening. This one, though, would by far and away be plenty. Yeah, and it is, as noted, uniquely American. Mm-hmm. And I want you to know, before we go into the details of this, that I made every attempt to make sure that this is a real story. Because some people in this country have lost their way as far as satire is concerned. And as a consequence, things that should, you know, there should be little clues inside satire to give it away as satire. But in a lot of cases these days, often there is not. So I double-checked this, and I can't find anything that suggests this is anything but real. The original story comes from RagingChickenPress.org. And the name of the website, the URL alone, was enough to send me out there trying to find out if this was actually a hoax. But no, it appears to be quite real. And in fact, this particular website, Raging Chicken Press, has an entire page dedicated to my friend and colleague, Rick Smith. So that kind of tells me that it's real, because Rick Smith is real. and no one is ever going to accuse Rick Smith of being a satirist. He has a brilliant book out, by the way, worth looking into. It's a story of his journey across America of a couple of summers back. It's well worth the read. No, this story comes to us from Western PA, from the region generally circumscribed by Newcastle, Chippewa, and Aliquippa, Pennsylvania. You might recall that Boss Man Wayne, who recently celebrated his 70th birthday, Boss Man Wayne is a proud son of Aliquippa. When Boss Man Wayne was a little boy, he was a shoeshine boy. And he actually shined the shoes of Mike Ditka back when Ditka was at the University of Pittsburgh. But also in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, there practices an oral surgeon by the name of George Visnich, V-I-S-N-I-C-H. George Visnich Jr., as a matter of fact, and he's a DMD, and he bills himself as Visnich Oral Surgery. And George Visnich, DMD, Jr., DMD, apparently has a booming practice. I mean, he's got three offices in Newcastle, PA, Chippewa, PA, and Aliquippa, PA. And he has a staff. And one of his staff members in his office, an office assistant, apparently not a dental hygienist or anything, but an office assistant, is a woman named Carol. Carol, meanwhile, not too long back, started having the pretty nasty stomach ache that persisted for several days. And you know how we are here in the land of the free and the home of the brave, where we've got the best gosh gall dang medical system in the world. Carol had a stomach ache for several days until her partner finally said to her, "Listen, go to the hospital, please." And so they did. And when they went to the hospital, they ran a few tests, and the somber physician came back and looked at Carol and said, "You've got cancer." Now, suffice to say that if we were talking about this story happening in civilization, say Germany or France or Sweden or Finland or Norway or the UK or Cuba or Japan or Australia, Italy, probably a few other countries that I haven't bothered to mention, then, well, Carol, upon getting that terrifying diagnosis, would have certain rights. First of all, she probably would have gone to the doctor sooner rather than later because she wouldn't have been worrying about bills, you know, medical bills, crippling medical bills and copays and silly shit like that. No, not silly shit, mean shit. Just would have gone to the doctor. That little sentence right there is terrifying enough. Her partner made her go to the hospital. It turns out she has cancer. So, necessarily, she informed her employer there at the oral surgery offices of George Visnich, Jr., DMD, Oral Surgery.
having received the word of Carol's diagnosis of cancer. Cancer. George Visnich Jr., DMD oral surgery, took out a piece of his pre-printed Visnich oral surgery, George Visnich Jr., DMD stationery, which has the word deer printed on it and a long blank, and George Visnich Jr., DMD, then wrote the name Carol, dear Carol in the blank, and then block printed the following. You are currently engaged in a battle against cancer that will be demanding physically, mentally, and emotionally. The symptoms of the disease, the pain medications you will need, and the side effects of the chemotherapy will be significant and distracting. Because I am a healthcare professional committed to the well-being of the patients that I see, and I carry that over into my daily life, I want you to know that we here at Visnich Oral Surgery, George Visnich Jr., DMD, will stand behind you all the way. The last thing in the world a newly diagnosed cancer patient needs to worry about is whether or not she will have an income or the healthcare coverage with which to access the best possible means of battling the disease. So we're right there with you, Carol, because you're a valued member of our team. No, it doesn't say that, because this is America, the greatest country in the world. You are currently, dear fill in the blank, Carol, you are currently engaged in a battle against cancer that will be demanding physically, mentally, and emotionally. The symptoms of the disease, the pain medications you will need, and the side effects of the chemotherapy will be significant and distracting. You will not be able to function in my office at the level required while battling for your life. Because of this, I am laying you off without pay as of August 11th, 2014. Your last paycheck will be mailed to you this Friday, August 15th, 2014. Our thoughts and prayers are with you as you fight this horrible disease. Thanks for your time at Visnich Oral Surgery. I hope your battle is swift, smooth, and successful! Exclamation point. As always, Dr. Visnich. No, really. What do you say? I mean, besides, I hope Dr. Visnich is hit by a bus. Because that was the first thing that came to mind for me. But again, I understand because I'm a mean person. But I mean, well, dang it, he's running a business. And businesses just won't run themselves. And you can't carry dead weight. Well, I mean, that's probably not the right phrase. You can't be carrying sick people just because they're sick on your payroll. I mean, you won't be able to afford fancy stationery that says, Dear Visnich, Visnich Oral Surgery, George Visnich Jr., DMD, Dear Fill in the Blank. You won't be able to afford that because you're carrying sick people. You know what? This is the perfect, and I do mean perfect, libertarian response. Dear Carol,
You've got cancer. Lift yourself up by your own bootstraps and get in that boat, because a rising tide raises all boats. Interesting observation coming out of the chat room from our buddy Waggy. If he thinks of his employees that way, imagine what he thinks of his patients. Well, we know what he thinks of his patients, Waggy. They're not patients. They're wealth transfer devices. And so, with this particular story, I would like to engage in a little bit of a thought experiment. And I really would appreciate a discussion on this topic. Does it have to be this way? And by the way, Carol is in her mid-40s. She's engaged. She's set to get married next year. And the story from Raging Chicken Press says, instead of pestering or bothering the employer who wrote this letter, her friend Rose would prefer to people send letters of encouragement to Carol, and if possible, attend the spaghetti dinner on October 4th in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, because this is America. And when you get cancer, it is up to the community to throw you a spaghetti dinner so that maybe you can have enough money to keep paying your bills while you are, what did kindly Dr. Visnich say? Battling for your life. Apparently no one told Dr. Visnich that battling for one's life, that when one is engaged in battle, one must have some form of weapon. I don't like this sort of warfare issue analogies, but still, if one goes into battle without ammunition, one will lose the battle. And in the capitalist free market, Ayn Randian anarcho, whatever, dead, unseen hand, whatever bullshit model we have, trying to battle a life-threatening disease with no goddamn money to keep your lights on or the heat, because, you know, winter's coming. I know, that TV show has made that phrase popular, but still. Well, you know, it ain't going to be much of a battle now, is it? Our thoughts and prayers are with you. Oh, Dr. George Visnich, Jr., DMD, pray in one hand and in the other, and see which one fills up first, Dr. George Visnich, Jr., DMD. This is one story out of a nation that is filled with similar horror stories. This is not a story, this is not a fact pattern that is ameliorated or alleviated by the Affordable Care Act. Hopefully, she will have some sort of coverage. She was working two jobs. This was her second job, her uniquely American job, because in America, well, we used to have this notion in America that a person could work, that if a person worked one job 40 hours a week, that one job should be enough, should pay enough to enable the person to live like a human being and even support a family. Oh, that's gone. Yeah.
Now, she was working two jobs. I guess this was the second job, the office assistant job. We don't know what's going to happen to her at the first job. Is she supposed to drag, you know, as she goes through chemo, radiation, whatever, is she supposed to get up every morning and drag herself off to wage slavery while, what was that term, battling for your life? I mean, I'm challenged to believe that this story is true. But there are enough details that make me think that it is. Spaghetti dinner fundraiser for Carol, October 4th, Croatian Club, 2365 Mill Street, Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, 3 to 7 p.m., cost $10. And if this is some form of satire, then they got me. Because you know what hooked me? Croatian Club. You may recall that our good friend Diane in Kansasstan called in a couple of Fridays back, and we talked a little bit about my love of the Berg, Pittsburgh. And there's somewhat relics of a bygone era, but they really do exist. I attended the wedding back in 1985 of one of my best friends in a suburb of Pittsburgh, and the reception was at the Italian Club. And as a little redneck boy from Alabama and West Virginia, I'd never heard of such a thing. But all over Pittsburgh, there are these things. There's the Serbian Club and the Croatian Club and the Italian Club and the Czech Club and the Slovak Club. And because during the boom of the Industrial Revolution, all of these immigrants tended to cluster together in little enclaves for mutual support, and they put these clubs together as a means of enhancing that community support. So on October 4th at the Croatian Club on Mill Street in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, there will be a spaghetti dinner to help raise enough funds to keep Carol at some subsistence level of existence while she engages in battling for her life, as George Visnich Jr., DMD, said. And again, I would like, after the break, I would like to engage in a significant conversation, if you can be persuaded to do so, about how a country that would like to stop reading these kinds of stories, and hint, the answer is not to simply quit reporting them. No, I'm talking about alleviating the circumstances by which these stories arise. How does a country go about doing that? Maybe some of our listeners in Germany would like to offer some sort of observation along those lines. Maybe our listeners elsewhere in Europe, in France maybe, would like to offer some sort of insight as to how that country handles this. What happens to you in the UK? What happens to you in civilization? When something like this befalls you and you are battling for your life. Because I'm pretty sure in a state that actually takes some kind of interest in social welfare, you're not just cast upon the tender mercies of the unseen hand of the free market, and left to whatever you can eke out in a nation in the thrall of Ayn Rand's idea that
that generosity is a, well, that it's for suckers, and that selfishness is a virtue. And Steve just did a little bit of, our buddy Steve just did a little bit of on-the-fly research. He said, Carol's dinner at the Croatian Club. He says, this story is true. I just called. Yeah, I don't like embarrassing myself by going off on a story that turns out to not be true. I would have been just as happy if Steve had written and said, hey, Bob, you can shut up now. You've been punked. This isn't real. This doesn't really happen in America. Wealthy oral surgeons don't send handwritten letters on mimeographed stationery to valuable employees telling them that they're laid off for getting cancer. But it's real. And it's America. And because of that phrase in the Constitution, you know, the one about promote the general welfare and establish and more perfect union. Well, those phrases in the preamble of the Constitution presuppose a nation that is willing to try to solve its problems instead of simply letting the problems pile up. So what would a law look like? And I'm not talking about a state law because, you know, F states' rights. The fact that, and because I still say that we live in a healthcare Plessy nation where one is born separate but equal. If one is born in Alabama versus, say, West Virginia. If you're born in Alabama, you don't have the Medicaid expansion, and by God, you can work as hard, and all you can do is pray you don't get sick, because if you do, well, Alabama is an entire state operating on the Viznich school of healthcare concern. But if you're from West Virginia, maybe you can get get expanded Medicaid if you're part of the working poor. See how it works. But could we craft a federal law? I mean, for instance, we have the Family Medical Leave Act, about which the Clinton administration ballyhooed, and the right wing and the chambers of commerce and what have you said, it'll destroy the economy of the United States, even though it's unpaid leave. Would it be possible to craft a paid leave bill in the United States? Would it be possible to craft a proposed law that would say that people are guaranteed a certain minimum amount of time off for illness in any given work year and a certain amount of minimal time off just to go off and fuck off if they want to and enjoy themselves for a little bit instead of just being a bunch of working goddamn drudges? Could we, I mean, or does French, is French capable of drafting a language, a bill like that? And is German capable of drafting a law like that? And is Swedish and Norwegian and Finnish capable of drafting a law like that? Is Danish capable of expressing those ideas, but English ain't? I don't know, but I think it would be a worthwhile and, in fact, a noble discussion to have. I'm of the understanding that this letter and Carol's story have gone viral. So with any hope at all, there will be lots and lots of people who can't make it to Aliquippa, but will be good for the $10 contribution to buy a ticket to the spaghetti dinner. And maybe that way we can make sure, because we, the people of the United States, trying to form that more perfect union, we can't collectively as a government say, or we don't at this point in time say, that people who get diagnosed with cancer ought not suddenly have the first thing they worry about be whether or not they're going to be able to have heat in winter. I don't know. But it's a damn frustrating situation, because, you know, in a country of 330 to 350 million people, you can generally statistically say that if it's happening once, it's happening a lot. Because even a tenth of 1% is a lot of people. And if it's happening a tenth of 1%, it's happening too many times. Hey, wait, let's drill down a little further. In a country that prides itself on being the greatest country in the world with the best healthcare system on earth, having it happen once is a million times too many. So we'll take our little top of the hour break. If you want to jump in on the conversation, you're more than welcome to. I encourage it. It doesn't have to be on the topic on which I've asked for discussion. We can talk about other things as well. But it would be nice if it was on that topic. The number, 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. Skype to Skype, it's just Bob Kincaid Horn. BobKincaidHorn. Bob Kincaid Horn. And you are welcome to participate. I encourage you to participate. Or send email to bobkincaid@gmail.com, or send a tweet to @BobKincaid, or put something over on the Facebook page, Bob Kincaid. Or you can always like the page and become a member of the group. It's a group, I think. The group at the Head On Radio Network on Facebook. Just send a member request and you're right in. Yep. Or jump into the chat room and participate that way. Interestingly, Steve says, sorry to email again. Don't apologize, Steve. Never apologize. This is a free exchange of information. Steve says, Bob, we have a law like this. As long as a person can perform the essential duties of a job with a reasonable accommodation, the employer cannot fire a person. I have to think a skilled employment lawyer could win a case like this. You know how to remedy all of this? Scrap all the laws prohibiting improper terminations and craft a law that a person cannot be fired except for cause. That's a start. But like so many legal remedies, it requires recourse to the court system. And as our friend Jim has noted, you know, the wheels of justice grind exceeding slow, but they grind exceeding fine. In this case, we don't need any fine grind. We need something to happen quick. And that's what we need. We need a mechanism in this country whereby you pick up the phone, you go, hey, I got diagnosed with cancer. They say, who diagnosed you? And you say, you know, I lost my job. George Visnich Jr., DMD of Visnich Oral Surgery, gave me a Laurel and Hardy handshake and an apple and a roadmap. And I got to have some help. And the person working for We the People of the United States, forming that more perfect union and attending to the needs of the general, promoting the general welfare on the other end of the line, says, great, check goes out this week. Of course, the problem is there's a philosophical demarcation here, because you can't have something like that if you got a bunch of assholes walking around in tricorn hats, worrying about Obama being the Antichrist and hollering about how they want smaller, limited government. Because, see, smaller, limited government can't respond to the needs of we the people. It can barely respond at all. Well, we just need a government that's just big enough to support the defense industry. That's the government we need. God bless America, patriotism. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, you have to understand, Bob, you can't have single-payer health care, paid family leave, mandatory vacation and sick leave and so forth, because if you do, then those Negroes will get it too, and we can't have all those people turning these programs into a hammock. It really does go back to all of that, doesn't it? It really, really does. Diane in Kansas, Stan, pointing out, well, leave it to the people around the burg to jump in to help out Carol. Yeah. Yeah. That's the heartening part of the story. And, of course, it would happen in Cleveland. Hell, if I go down the road here, because there's one little joint that makes a mighty nice French fry, and they make some really good ranch to dip it in. Let's not have the Bob's Diet conversation yet. But walked in there the other day, and of course there is the obligatory giant pickle jar that somebody's gouged the top out of the hole in the middle lid, and plastered a picture of somebody on the front that says, "Please help with your change. So-and-so is undergoing cancer treatment." And so I dug into my pocket for whatever was rattling around there and dumped it all in. That's a hell of a way to have to figure out you're going to survive. Shake out the pickle jar, the coal-fired, affordable coal-fired power bills due. And see, when this story gets just viral enough, I know what George Visnich Jr.'s excuse is going to be. Well, I fired her so she could get on the welfare and get her some health care. I'm really not as big an asshole as I come across as in that there letter. I'd have let her kept a working as long as she could work. I mean, I'm not going to pay her when she's laying her flat on her back. I mean, this is America. Wrong accent, I know. Ray pointing out by email, we are terrified of ourselves. We're afraid of each other. We're filled with rage. We growl and cowl in our cages, afraid we know not what. We follow only empty leaders and invisible gods. Anybody else might actually want something. Our buddy Philip, with a note. Going back to the opening story. Much as I loathe Fox's racism, I've always been appalled by the laxity of the Ravens management when addressing, and this is because Philip is a Marylander via Massachusetts and Texas, I might remind you. I've always been appalled by the laxity of the Ravens management when addressing, or more aptly stated, ignoring player misconduct. I've been living in Maryland for 16 years and have never supported the team because of its willingness to tolerate unacceptable conduct by better players. When the Patriots' Aaron Hernandez was initially suspected of murder, the team cut him immediately. I'll tell you, Bob, between the Deadskins and the Ravens, pro football is mighty gruesome in these here parts. Yeah, there was a beatdown yesterday on the Washington Football Club, wasn't there? Was there? Of course, Philip says, as a result of the additional video footage, I suspect that a chagrined Roger Goodell will announce that the assault in the elevator was not a domestic dispute because it occurred in public and will instantly ban rice at all future NFL weddings. Oh, Philip. Oh, I didn't see that one coming. That was nice. Toaster! As for Elizabeth Hasselbeck, her husband and brother-in-law graduated from my private Catholic high school, and I am constantly embarrassed by her inanity, stupidity, and obtuse racism. My only saving grace is that I declined attending Boston College after I was accepted because it would have been too much like high school all over again and left me a working-class mix surrounded by the affluent right-wing Catholics who were in force at my high school after the busing crisis. Of course, Elizabeth and Tim met at Boston College, and the rest is history. Elizabeth has acknowledged that her connection to the Hasselbecks is the reason for her success. So I'll declare here and now that I don't care about the money. I won't marry a Hasselbeck to boost my career. And I think it's high time that we on the left began spreading the rumor that Elizabeth is the love child of Bill O'Reilly and Ann Coulter. Get busy. And you know, you could tweet that in the Fox format. Some people wonder if Elizabeth Hasselbeck is the love child of Bill O'Reilly and Ann Coulter. Philip closes saying, lastly, let me say a kind word about Fox. I have banned it in my household since its inception, but I must admit I am grateful that it regularly disproves theories of European racial supremacy in the United States, and that is a plus. Whenever my daughters see it outside of the home, they ask, how can people be so stupid that they watch and believe this crap? And I smile, contentedly knowing that Fox has done the yeoman's share of work in explaining the reactionary and fascist right wing to my children. Thanks, Fox! Be well to all my fellow horn communists. Signed, Philip. Thank you, Philip. Humor and trenchant observation all in one. I live for that. Meanwhile, a note coming in from Devin, who for the first time in Horn Malloy Skype chat group history was the host other than Sparky on Friday night. Devin noting, my mom works at the hospital. The coverage is worse than no coverage. She can only use their hospitals, which have killed or disabled most of her co-workers. Those who needed surgery, at least. Everyone who needs surgery gets a serious infection. Many get dropped off the table or to die with their guts on the floor. This may be we may have a bigger problem to solve than we thought we did. Thanks, Devin. Randy and PA pointing out, you know, that last name Biznich seems to be like something out of Little Shop of Horrors. It may be. I'm surprised his goddamn name isn't Sweeney F. and Todd. Just lay back. We'll get those teeth. We'll take them off at the collar. We'll take them out at the collarbone. Yeah, M. Brandt in the chat room got that, Randy. Feed me, Viznich! Oh. So here we are, break time, 22 minutes past the hour. Light up the phone if you want to. You're welcome to. We welcome it. We enjoy it. All of us do, not just me and that mouse in my pocket. 304-574-8178 or Bob Kincaid Horn Skype to Skype. Okie dokie? Okie dokie. This is listener supported, and I'm proud to announce again that Greg's Moran Monday challenge has been met. This is listener supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Mary Alice had a baby, and he looked just like I did. He got married on a Monday, and I've been working ever since, every week down at the Ford plant. But now they're shutting down. Goddamn Reagan's in the White House. Nobody gives a damn. Double digit unemployment. TVA be shutting soon. While over there in Huntsville, putting people on the moon. So I took to running numbers for this man I used to know. I sell a few narcotics, and I sell a little blow. I ain't getting rich now, but I'm getting more than five. It'd be tough to make a living, but a man's just gotta try. If I died in Culver County, would it make the evening news? They're too busy blowing rockets, putting people on the moon. She quit asking, why do the things I do?
So she didn't get no chemo, and our lives it was destroyed. Nothing ever changes. Cemetery gets more full. You know that they're in Huntsville. Even NASA shut down too. Another joker's in the White House. Said a change was coming round, but I'm working at the Walmart. Mary Alice in the ground. And all the politicians, they are lying sacks of shit. They say better days upon us, but it's sucking left on dead. And the preacher on the TV says it ain't too late for me. But I bet he drives a Cadillac, and I'm broke with hungry mouths to feed.
The drive-by truckers putting people on the moon. You know, that goes all the way back to the economic collapse that happened in North Alabama in the Reagan miracle of the early 80s. I lived through that. Boy, did I live through that. Genius. And it kind of goes to show that this is not a... You know, these are not new phenomena. Understand that when I use that phrase uniquely American, because when we talk about a story like Carol's, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. It's the second half of the program now, almost. More in Monday. When we talk about stories like Carol's, we need to understand one thing. This is exactly, this isn't, Carol's story is not a flaw, it's a feature of right-wing, republic, and conservative economics. The terrifying, hellish life that Carol is leading right now is the right-wing wet dream of how freedom is supposed to be. Because, you know, I've heard it all too many times already. Right wingers who say, you know, they want to shut down Social Security because, you know, charity is the church's business. Can you imagine leaving the religion industry to dole out Social Security? Or to make sure that the lights stay on in the homes of people like Carol while they are battling for their lives? Give me neither. But understand, I mean, I want to get all the way down to the ground with this. Carol's story is a Republican success story, a right-wing success story. an Ayn Rand success story, a John Boehner success story, a Paul Ryan success story, okay? This is what they want. This is a Ted Cruz success story. This is a Rand Paul success story. Never mind the fact that that having things like this, if you are listening, by the way, to Dr. Bill, and you really should be, that this is exactly the kind of thing that the founders and framers were contemplating when they said that this government will have to change over the course of time. We will have to be prepared to deal with a larger population and the needs of that population. And these, you know, because, see, having electricity is not one of Carol's wants, it's a need. Right? Right. Robert in Australia with a note. Here I am sounding like a broken record. Yes, we have government agencies, canceraustralia.gov.au. Each state has a cancer council. As for being fired for getting cancer, no employer would risk it. They'd be hit with an unfair dismissal case, which they'd lose. See, it serves, right, and that's what I was talking about in regard to the note that Steve sent earlier. It is, it's ineffectual to have legal structures in place in which justice only happens on the back end if you win. I mean, that's how, for instance, workers' comp has been ruined in state after state after state. You've got to have it on the front end. You've got to have, the carrot and the stick? Well, you've got to have the stick out, too. Compliance sometimes has to be compelled among classes of people who think only of profits. Robert continues, as for being fired for getting cancer, no employer would risk it. They'd be hit with an unfair dismissal case, which they'd lose. If you're unwell and unable to work in Australia, disability pension up to $322 per week if you won't be returning to work. Sickness allowance up to $335 per week if you will be going back to work. If you're caring for someone with cancer and unable to work, carer payment up to $335 per week. And there are various concession cards and other allowances. Support for people with cancer here in Australia isn't as good as it should be, but it sounds better than the U.S. It's vastly better, Robert, because it's something. And I will note that last I checked, and Robert can correct me if I'm wrong, last I checked, with all of these things which are not brand new in Australia, the Australian economy is not in a state of abject collapse. Note coming in from Randy, he says, I hate to play Susie Orman, but as a financial note, most people are not supposed to spend more than one-third of their income on rent. Many people, including myself, are exceeding that by a wide degree. And that's true. And I say that because, I note all of this because we're in the middle of a political year. And sweet Jesus, as soon as these November midterm elections are over, it is going to become absolutely ungoddamn bearable. I sat down to watch some NFL football yesterday. Save the criticisms. And I got buried in political ads because it's political season. And, of course, these political ads are a giant welfare windfall to the broadcast companies, all of which are owned by the right wing, by the way. And I sat there watching these things. Nick Rahal doesn't love coal. Evan Jenkins loves coal. Nick Rahal not only doesn't love coal, he loves that Obama, and if we thought we'd get away with it, we'd say a different word instead of Obama. Evan Jenkins doesn't love Obama. Vote Evan Jenkins for America, for coal, for God. Amen.
I'm Evan Jenkins, and I approve this here message.
And then a few minutes later, Evan Jenkins doesn't love Cole. Evan Jenkins loves Evan Jenkins. Nick Rahal loves Cole. Nick Rahal stands with the hard-working miners of the United Mine Workers of America. He loves them. Evan Jenkins doesn't love them. Evan Jenkins hates unions. All of which is probably true. But I'm about this close to declaring a pox upon all your houses. Leave my goddamn public airwaves alone. See, so many problems we have in the United States, we have because we have presumed that things have always been that way. Are you familiar with that little short black and, or maybe it was color, I don't remember. You remember Shirley Jackson's short story, The Lottery? I remember having to watch it in high school or something. And it's a terrifying, really creepy tale when you get right down to it. But there's a character in the short story, The Lottery, who says, well, there's always been a lottery. Lottery in June, corn heavy soon. And there's a lot of this stuff that we just say, well, you know, it's that way. Every couple of years, only now it's constant. We're going to have our ability to sit down and participate in media absolutely ruined by a bunch of hacks and flacks and political hucksters and liars and filth merchants. The other word for them are, you know, consultants. And every couple of years, we're told by people who do statistical analysis and studies and polls and stuff that, you know, by this humongous margin, because nobody will admit it, that, you know, the poll happens, they call you and they think, hi, this is Thumbfinger Research. How do you feel about negative attack ads? Oh, I hate them. I hate them. Piss me off no end saying them nasty things about a man I know to be as decent as Bill Doberman or, you know, whatever, whoever the candidate is. I hate them. Well, would you support a candidate who runs them? Hell no! And yet, on the other end of the spectrum, you get this constant barrage of data that shows that the damn things work. And here we sit, powerless against them, just like we're powerless against an economic system that did what it did to Carol in Aliquippa. Because we look at these filthy political ads and we say, well, that's the price we pay for having free speech in America. Really? Really? Do you think you've got free speech in America? You just toddled your happy ass down to WFUK and tell them you want to run an ad talking about how great you are. And then they'll say, well, that'll be $3,500 for 30 seconds. You say, but I ain't got 3,500. Well, then you ain't going to run one. How's that free speech working out for you? Now, you, citizen, who aren't nearly as good as a corporate person, you can stand on the street corner and holler, but if you holler too loud or too long, a cop will come along and spray you in the face with pepper spray, shoot you with a taser, get you down on the ground, and then call his buddies over to stomp the guts out of you for a while, and it's going to turn into such tiring work stomping your guts out that they're going to take turns, just like they got caught doing in New York City in the past few days. See how it works? Steve noting with a note. See how that works? Noting with a note. God, I'm good. Just to clarify, Steve says, I agree that any law should be prospective on the front end. The Family Medical Leave Act should be at least 6 months of paid leave for the Carols of the world. Please don't anyone think I think what we have is the least bit sufficient. And I don't think anybody did, Steve.
and I get what you're going at. Where to go? We've got more in Monday stuff. I don't know. We had a call on Skype, but it dropped away. I don't know if. I don't know if we just dropped the call or if whoever was on there gave up in frustration. I just wanted to get that stuff out of there. If you want to participate in the program, area code 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. Got a little bit of an update from our friend Patrick in Germany. An update on the Sharia police issue. Patrick says, Patrick's listening, not in real time. I just heard you mentioning my email on the Sharia police matter on the Friday program. The way you presented it was almost funny, but it's not a laughing matter, of course. The Sharia police also ask women, and these are these self-appointed religious maniacs wandering around it's not a little town, 350,000 people, Wuppertal in Germany, somewhere near the Rhine Valley, somewhere near Dusseldorf. Maybe it's not in the Rhine Valley. Patrick said, the way you presented it, it was almost funny, but it's not a laughing matter. The Sharia police also ask women why they are out on the streets after dark and let them know that their place is in the house. They also advise women not to dress like whores. They are doing the Lord's work. Oh, yes. I don't know exactly how these disgusting individuals approach people, but I don't think the way they do it is illegal, just talking to people and presenting their opinions. You were asking if one could call the police if feeling threatened. You sure can in Germany, and I would advise people to do so, and surely the police will try to assist you, but at the same time, the charge will almost certainly be thrown out before it even goes to court. And this is the heart of Patrick's note, follow-up note. The big problem the officials are facing is that any criticism toward these Muslim fundamentalists will almost certainly be labeled as being fascist and compared to our dark past. Muslims, Jews, gays, and even feminists use that card whenever it is convenient. However, I really hope they somehow find a way to stop this madness. I would also be very interested to hear more about similar problems they have in Sweden from Scott. I hear that the city of Malmo is, I don't know if I did the O right or not, Malmo, is practically ruled by Muslim gangs and the police are not even present anymore. Wow, I would be interested in knowing that from Scott myself. Thank you, Patrick. And by way of examination of that whole topic we were into on Friday, we had a note from Philip. And this, there was a great deal that went into this note, and I think it deserves consideration. And I think maybe upon hearing this in response, Patrick might be able to offer a little bit of insight as well. Because I really appreciated what Patrick said about our dark past. That that's an element of never again. Being very, very careful about not deliberately stepping on the rights of individuals or discriminating against them because of accidents of birth. But again, larger questions exist as to the phrase we have here in American English. I don't know if it's in British English or not. American English is, your rights end where my nose begins. And by the way, answering a question a little bit ago, I don't know why we keep dropping calls. I hope it's not a bandwidth thing. In answer to an earlier question about what would happen in a civilized country in a case like Carol's, Anthony wrote in via Facebook and said, hey, Bob, since I was born in the UK, Scotland, and still have family there, as well as Manchester, England, I can answer your question with authority on what would happen if the woman from Pennsylvania came down with cancer across the pond. She'd be effing taken care of.
My aunt had breast cancer 28 years ago, and the last time we spoke, she was feeling fine. America. But, of course, remember, please, that if we were, in fact, to suggest some sort of humane approach to catastrophic illness or anything like that, the Chamber of Commerce would run ads claiming that the economy is going to collapse. Now, it's never collapsed. Turns out they're liars, but that's what you'd have. I want to go to Philip's remarks via email, but I don't want to run the risk of dropping another call. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Oh, sorry about that. This is my first phone call into a radio show. So.
Well, you know what? I'm proud to tell you, you will survive. All I need is a first name to work with.
John.
Hey, John. That'll work.
I'm just one of these old truck drivers running down the road, and I got to listen to your commentary on the Carol situation. And after what little hair I have left pulled out from hearing this, it just comments the whole thing about the way this country operates right now. You have everybody loving the hell out of Capitol. But the people don't matter a damn thing to anybody. And they'll chew you up and spit you out in a heartbeat.
Oh, absolutely, John. And let's bear in mind that there's a complete cognitive disconnect involved with that, because capital doesn't even exist without people.
Oh, exactly. I mean, you sit there and you look at that, and it's funny. I'll sometimes sit in the truck stops and stuff, of course, you know, without going into a lot of detail, you'll sit there at a truck stop, and it's like, they, of course, have the mandatory Fox News on, because if you ask them to change it, they'll say, well, corporate told us we have to do no things, to disseminate that thing. And they'll sit there, and they'll argue with you, and of course, so many of the guys, especially in my industry, can sometimes be, what's a polite word for it, conservative.
Yeah.
And, they'll sit there and they'll sit there right there and argue with you. And this case of tales on the first time I've heard of it. And they'll sit there and say, well, you know, her insurance will take care of that. But what they're not taking into account is that because the doctor fired her, there's a good probability that she'll lose whatever insurance she had with the job.
Yeah. And COBRA coverage, I guess, is still out there. But anybody who's ever tried to pay for COBRA coverage knows that that's a losing proposition.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're talking, hundreds of dollars a week. You now have to cover the full float. And if this doctor is as nasty as his little letter pulled out to be, I can almost bet you next dollars that he's probably got the cheapest insurance out there ever was. Ducked was out the wazoo. And it's like, holy crap. And yeah, it just gets a little rough after a while to sit there and hear story after story. And what really bothers me, I guess, is just how easily it is that people accept it to be normal.
Well, and that's kind of what I was getting at, John, because we have become so accustomed to these problems that we think these problems are actually reality when they're not. All of these things can be solved, but they're only going to be solved if we get at least a noisy plurality of Americans who insist upon solving them.
Well, you're not going to. When they made the decision to turn things like CNN into not an independent standing news source, but rather a division of the entertainment division, General Electric, you automatically know where they're coming from. They're not going to say anything that's going to tick off their their owners and those stock shares and all that good stuff. And it's just like, I hate to sound like I'm a closet communist, although to some extent I am. But when you get people who want to own everything, and then they can't own you, at least not yet, because they fought a war back 100-some years ago to say you couldn't own people. But these sons of guns are going out back every twisted way they can to figure out how they can go back to that magic world. by every little back door. Well, you know, we have a right to work state, and we can let you go for any reason for business.
Well, right.
And that's.
And where does that get you? I mean, we understand that it really we understand that right to work is a big turn on for the 1%. But what just slays me, John, is the number of working people who go, you know, I probably wouldn't have a job if it wasn't for right to work. No.
I hear it all the time. I'll hear some guy with this little snarky comment that says, I've never gotten a job from a poor person. It's always been a rich person. And then I'll, of course, come back and say, I can place decks of dollars right now that a rich person has never hired anybody. They only hire if they're forced to in order to make more money. And the minute that some piece of technology comes along or some new process or a new location or somebody passes a law that says, oh, well, let's give you a tax break here so you can send that job over to Taiwan, your job's gone.
Oh, exactly.
And it's like, you can but, you know.
Well, I mean, here in West Virginia, John, the classic case is, of course, the United Mine Workers of America. In 1980, there were 100,000 coal mining jobs in West Virginia. In 2014, there are less than 15,000. And that is because of mechanization. Exactly what you were talking about. And yet the UMWA signed on and said, yeah, we love that strip mining. Let's have more of that strip mining. And cut their own throats.
Well, it's not cutting their own throats. They see the handwriting on the wall. And so they would rather go down, you know, bubble, bubble, second, third, fourth time, you know, stick a finger up in the air and hope somebody grabs it, to not just be out altogether. I mean, you have to tell. That's my view of it. I mean, my father was, bless his poor little country hide. He never got out of high school. And, you know, unions have their problems. But, I get a little teed off when I hear all this anti-union stuff because my father, he worked two jobs his entire life. Fortunately, both were union. And he had his heart attack. It was because of that union, because of those contracts, that he was able to take the entire year plus. He had enough sick leave, enough annual leave, all that stuff built up, that when he got through his recovery, he was able to go back to work, and he still had several weeks of vacation time still built in. Cheryl, that would be something that would be fantastic for her and her situation.
Right.
But does she have access to that? Chances are no.
No. And let's remember, John, that the reason unions exist is not workers. The reason unions exist is employers. There would never have been a union in this country if every worker was treated fairly. But instead people were brutalized. And the thing is, that is not something that used to happen. That is happening right here, right now. Hello, Carol.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You sit there, I travel all over the country. And I happened to, maybe about 4 or 5 months ago, I was passing through Tennessee and got into a truck stop where we got into a nice little one of those at the lunch counter, knock down, drag out. I have a nasty habit of asking evil questions, like to truck drivers and stuff, and bitch about things like the debt and stuff. And I say, do you know where your money comes from and how it's valued? Government prints. I'm like, oh, this is so cool. And then it goes from there. I mean, the level of, maybe it's a public education thing, maybe it's just the way people are, maybe it's the propaganda. But people don't even know how their money is made, they don't know where it comes from, they don't know how their society works, but they'll be real quick to point fingers and say, you did it. Here's the reason why I don't have a job. Here's the reason why, blah, blah, blah. And it just goes on from there. It's just crazy. I mean, I've bumped into Canadian truck drivers. And I love hearing a lot of them talk about how, why are all these people think that Canadian health care is so good? They're coming down here to buy health care. Yeah, they might be buying some of the elective stuff, but every Canadian truck driver that I run across they're all saying the same thing. You Americans are stupid.
Well, yeah, I mean, but John, bear in mind, a lot of the citizens of the United States are so dim that they actually believe the lies that the profiteers have put out. A bunch of, and I was remarking on this with a Canadian listener the other day. We're so not sharp that there's a bunch of Americans who think that if a Canadian goes into the ER with a heart attack, that they get put on a waiting list.
Oh yeah, I hear that constantly. And you know, the last driver I talked to, his wife got cancer, and he said, yeah, she was on a waiting list, but she wasn't going to die the next day. And so there was a processing period. There was, you know, they worked her in to get the right medications, take her to the right places, do the right things, and were very successful. Now, if she had a heart attack, she'd have been bumped to the front of the line.
Right.
In front of the people who may have had just a broken leg or something.
If you roll into the ER in Toronto or wherever, Vancouver, what have you, with a sucking chest wound, they're not going to make you wait back behind the sprained ankle. It's called triage. They didn't forget how to do that because they got national health care. And to be fair, the members of the Horn Family Commune congregation who are listening from Canada go absolutely crazy over that stuff. Because it's an insult. It's a slur. I mean, that's what the right wing is doing with this. They are actively slurring our nearest and best neighbor.
Yeah, they do it all the time because, you know, the greatest thing that a conservative, quote-unquote, right-winger, hardcore, you know, Bible-thumping yahoo is they are afraid of losing power. And because and this is me jumping on my little tiny soapbox and doing my little 5-cent tap dance, but I see it so often that it's this authoritarian, I've got to be in control. You want something and I'm going to have to give it to you. No, can't have it, blah, blah. And it just goes from there.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how you found the program, John, but I'm awfully doggone glad you did.
I've been listening to you off and on for about 6 months or so. I'm starting to climb out of a hole, so you may be able to count me in as a contributor here for a little while.
Well, bless your heart, but don't make that the central function.
It's not. And I was motivated to call because this subject matter, and like you say, we're starting the beginning of that process of elections. And it just gets ridiculous, you know, all the Yahoo goober stuff going on.
I don't have TV here, but I was going to treat myself to a little NFL yesterday, and it wound up being a season in hell.
Mm-hmm. I hate to do this to you, but unfortunately, I've got the phone call popping in.
Hey, you go and take it, John. I enjoyed the conversation. I'm also and hey, look, another first time caller survives. John, drive carefully. I hope we'll hear from you soon.
My sucking chest wound is good. Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye now. Oh, I do. I love first-time calls. That's wonderful. That's John on the road somewhere. Thanks, John. And thanks for the trenchant observations. It's a one-phone line affair until we get some more technical kinks worked out, but the all-volunteer staff is working on that, too. If you want to jump into the program, see how easy it is. Are you a first-time caller? Have you been lurking for 6 months? You can call in too to Conversation Radio. This is a great way to learn how to go about doing it. 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. Skype to Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn. BobKincaidHorn. And I was going to point something out to you over on my Facebook page. I posted something yesterday as a result of having watched all those filthy commercials. And they are. They're filthy. Okay? What did Justice Potter Stewart say about obscenity? I can't tell you what it is, but I know it when I see it. I thought of that yesterday with the political ads. And by the way, just because you're not watching TV doesn't mean you can't get away from it. They're on YouTube now. They're everywhere. And so, but anyway, no, I thought about Potter Stewart on obscenity. I don't know what it is, but I know it when I see it. I knew it when I saw it yesterday. Because it is obscene. The deliberately false flaying of individual character for nothing more than hubristic ambition to get into politics so that you can do the bidding of your owners, the Koch brothers, is obscene. If we applied the obscenity standard that Potter Stewart was talking about on the Supreme Court to political advertising, you'd never be able to run another one. Or at least not another attack ad. These aren't issue ads. That, and you know, that's the little lace slip that they hide behind. Well, these are just issue related ads and bull. Shelley Moore Capito, you know, Arch's daughter, the daughter of the single most corrupt politician West Virginia has ever birthed, has been caught out numerous times for simply lying. Just straight up, no bones about it, lying. And there are no consequences for it. In fact, she will probably be rewarded for her lies with a seat in the United States Senate. And I got lots of problems with Natalie Tennant, her opponent. But pointing out, as does Anatole in the chat room. Hi, Anatole. But that does not negate the fact that Shelley Moore is a liar. And I about laughed myself right out of my shoes this morning. It has become axiomatic, and I don't know if you've noticed this in your own jurisdictions. But the right wing hooting and hollering about Obamacare has cooled considerably in everywhere except the most weird enclaves of right wingism. You know, Tennessee has signed on to the Medicaid expansion. Pennsylvania has signed on to the Medicaid expansion. Arizona signed on to the Medicaid expansion. Arkansas signed on to the Medicaid expansion. You know, with tweaks and modifications, but they're free money. Yeah, I really did say most weirdest a minute ago. Sorry. Grammar takes a holiday. Anyhow. So this morning, the headline in the Charleston Gazette, which is the paper of record for this state, and is still locally owned, the headline was, here we go, see if I can find it. There it is. Yeah, this is precious. I mean, like I said, I just about laughed myself out of my shoes. It's a story about the race between Archmore's daughter and Natalie Tennant. And the headline just jumped right off the little rack and grabbed me. I mean, whoever's doing the copy editing down at the Gazette is good. On ACA, Senate candidates embrace popular parts of unpopular law. Unpopular with who there, Cephas? It's pretty popular with me. But David Gutman wrote the article. In West Virginia, as in every other state, health insurance companies cannot deny coverage or charge more for it because of pre-existing medical conditions. See, for instance, in the case of Carol, and Carol, whom we've been discussing this evening, had Carol been diagnosed, had Carol not had health care and was diagnosed with cancer and then tried to get health care before the Affordable Care Act was passed, the health insurance company would have been able to say, go die quickly. You have a pre-existing condition. There is at least some margin of hope out there that Carol will have some kind of coverage that will provide her help in battling for her life, as George Visnich Jr., DMD Oral Surgery, put it so eloquently to her in his touching letter. The article continues, the Affordable Care Act, commonly known as Obamacare, is responsible for that change. Along with expanding coverage, banning discrimination against people with pre-existing conditions was the primary goal of the law. It's a pretty popular change. Past polling has shown widespread support for banning discrimination against pre-existing conditions. As of today, and here's the fun part, I mean, this is the part where I just started hooting like a barn owl in heat. As of today, both major candidates for U.S. Senate in West Virginia are running ads touting their support for the provision while simultaneously distancing themselves from the law and the unpopular president that put it into effect. No, really. Secretary Tenet had a little girl who had a heart defect, and she's, of course, trotting that story out in her head. But the best part is this part of the article. Representative Shelley Moore Capito, Tenet's Republican opponent and likely victor, was in Congress when the law was passed. She voted against it and has voted to repeal, defund, or cripple it dozens of times since then. In her new ad on health care, Capito attacks the health care law while supporting the provision on pre-existing conditions. This administration has put a big damper on our way of life and our love of freedom. But Shelley Moore Capito supports guaranteed coverage for all pre-existing illnesses, so all we have to do is scrap the entire health care law, and we'll just reinstitute a ban on pre-existing conditions. And if you believe that, well, if you believe that, you probably took Towson State against the Mountaineers on Saturday. Jesus. And she pays no price for this kind of lying. You mean those dozens of times that I voted to defund or cripple the law? Well, I didn't vote to defund or cripple the part about the pre-existing conditions. No, oh, wait, that was in there, too. Oh, well, I didn't know. I sure do want to be senator, though, and I'll quit lying after I am. See, my eyes aren't blinking. Can we talk about how funny the freedom disaster was? Because I thought it was funny. Jesus. Let's go back to the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, it's Diane from Kansas Dan again.
Hey, Diane.
How are you, Bob?
Pretty good, I think. So far, no major crises in getting the program out tonight. I'm a happy camper.
That's wonderful. It's wonderful. I'm sorry you went through that week of... The week that was.
Oh, it was a very stressful week, I must say.
Oh, I'm sure it was. And we were all rooting for you, but what can you do with technology that I don't know what you were battling, but it had to do with the storm, as I recall. And an
incompetent corporation, but... Yeah.
Exactly. Yes, that was the other piece of the story, and that's the part that I always zoom in on. including this story with Carol, that story emblematic of so many things. And, you know, I have a rhetorical question to pose about Carol's story.
Okay.
But first, I'd like to say that listening to you report on what West Virginia politicians are saying openly is just painful.
It ain't exactly a walk in the park for me, neither.
Not that the politicians here in Kansas do much better, although there is a race heating up in Kansas that will be interesting. A backlash against Brownback and Roberts.
Oh yeah, the Pat Roberts thing, where the Democrat has bowed out in favor of the independent, and all the Republicans are crying. I think this is something that was machinated by that Chicago political machine, Obama.
Oh God. The thing is, as I understand it, our state attorney general will not allow the bow out to remove himself from the ballot. I mean, as I understand it, first the bow out was accepted, but then the state attorney general, in a move that's reminiscent of one in Ohio and elsewhere, as I recall, decided that his name should be on the ballot. I can't remember the guy's name, but his name should be on the ballot even though he's not running. So obviously that's orchestrated to work to Pat Roberts' benefit, reportedly. And I'm getting my information on this from an interview Sam Cedar did with Cliff Schechner, who seems to know what he's talking about.
Yeah, he does.
I have to listen to him to really figure out what's going on in Kansas. But I'm not surprised at that kind of foolishness. But I do have a question about Carol's situation, and it is rhetorical. And it is, I'm going to pose it sarcastically, you know, openly.
Go right ahead, yes.
Okay, so let's put the profound moral issue to the side, if we can. The obvious moral issue. Why do these people, quote,
I know.
This oral surgeon, they don't seem to realize, why is it they don't think that'll be out on a tweet, scanned, posted? Why is it they don't pause and think about that?
I don't think it's rhetorical then. I think this is actually, you know, something that's fruit for discussion.
Yeah.
On the one hand, it may be generational.
Yeah.
On the other hand, they may be completely clouded by their sense of privilege.
Well, you're right. It's not a rhetorical question, and that what you just said is closer to what I believe happened.
But I am leaving a little bit of philosophical room open here for the possibility that this is it's a narrow space that this was actually by design.
Oh, so she could get
so that Medicaid. She could access Medicaid or something.
Yeah.
But that is a very narrow space for me.
Yeah. Huh. I just wonder. Well, okay. In that narrow space, I would wonder, would it confound that plan to have a typewritten letter and say you have 2 weeks severance pay? You know, like it could be played out maybe differently in that scenario, or not.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he canned her on August the 11th and made her final check on the 15th, so it's not like there's severance pay or anything like that involved.
Yeah.
He's only
yeah.
paying her for time actually worked.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that made me think that maybe that's what this is about. But
oh.
Because if there was a severance package, you know, I don't think that, maybe I'm wrong, I don't think the Medicaid expansion has taken effect yet in Pennsylvania, or if it has, it's in its you know, very nascent beginnings. But any way you slice it, back when means testing was a part of Medicaid, if you had anything at all, you know, if you lived in a cardboard box, you had to get rid of the cardboard box in order, in many states, in order to qualify for Medicaid.
Yeah.
For instance, I know in West Virginia, you know, working people who have children and are the working poor with no assets can get Medicaid, or could. But a single individual with no children who was in poverty could not, if they had any kind of a job. Yeah. So I have to intellectually leave a little bit of room in there for that. But it still doesn't ring true for me.
Well, in that narrow range, do you think that he was precluded from telling her that that's what he was doing? Like, that would have ruined it? Or
I don't know. That might have made it arguably a fraud upon the system.
Yeah. What the system? What it creates is beyond words. I have no words for this. What I was thinking, because my mind just always goes here because of what I do and what I've studied and blah, 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 is that whole thing about free to choose in business, that mime, free to choose. It's really entrenched in the, well, at least in management and business education. I mean, it's either there implicitly or overtly. Free to choose, free to choose. So I think one hypothesis is that someone just gets in that groove and then they don't stop and think, I'm just free to do this, you know. Free to choose.
Yeah, and Diane, that's out there in so many instances. For instance, you know, the so-called right to work states, you know, there is if it is that reduces everything to just law of the jungle, and it's you and the employer, and you're all negotiating individual contracts, and in a right to work state, all employment is deemed to be what is legally termed at will.
Mm-hmm.
And at-will employment, the way the right wing spends it is, well, that means you're free. That means, you know, you're not, Mr. Working Stiff, are not tied down to that job. If you're working for $10 an hour and somebody comes along and says, I'm going to pay you $15 an hour, you can tell your boss to take his job and shove it and go start working for $15 an hour. Well, of course, it doesn't work that way in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
What it really means is you can be fired for any reason or no reason, which ultimately winds up meaning you can be fired for no reason. You don't even have to be told why. You just, you know, hit the brakes.
Yeah.
But that's freedom, Diane.
Yeah.
That's choice.
Yeah, freedom. Mm. This is recalling a conversation I had long ago when I called the governor's office in Kansas and was inquiring on work conditions. I just had a few questions. I was curious. And what I found out from the chief of staff, I think it might have been, Graves was governor then. He was from Salina. And it was after I first moved to Kansas, and I wanted to know where I'd, you know, come back to, what was going on. And so the public affairs person I talked with was very, very helpful and just openly said, this, if I recall the conversation correctly, this is an at-will, you know, right-to-work state. But he said the lawyers in the state got so upset about abuses of power in the workplace that they put together a commission of human rights. And later I wrote to the director of that commission, and the letter came back on the governor's letterhead, so I started putting stuff together. At any rate, this public affairs specialist went on to say, and so now in Kansas, people can file a human rights complaint based on, and he read a list, gender, age, nationality. I don't think sexual preference was in there, but I don't have the list in front of me. And he said, and then what happens is that that case is assigned a number, and the state of Kansas goes, that office goes to, the workers in that office go to whomever in the workplace they need to go to, and they offer arbitration and mediation. And then there's a process it goes to, and it's a antecedent to an EEOC complaint. So I thought, well, now that's interesting, you know?
Yeah.
That there would be, this is a right to work state, but the lawyers in Kansas, not just individual lawyers, this was under their umbrella association. They got this through, to the state level as a process. So at least there's that here. But the illuminating part of that conversation was the governor's public affairs specialist saying the lawyers got so upset about all the human rights complaints. I'm like, I bet.
But again, even in a situation like that, Diane, we come back to what Steve was talking about when he pointed out that this is all back end stuff. And we need not just the carrot out there in front of employers, but we need the stick too.
I'm often struck by the opportunity costs of these processes. You know, exactly. I agree. Because
Wait. I have to know more about that phrase you just used.
Oh.
Opportunity
cost. The economist
cost.
In me has just trotted out.
Well, okay. So I want to know what I want to know what opportunity cost is.
Well, I've watched some of, I'm not going to go into detail, but I work for a large institution, and I've watched people go through some stuff and look at their, you know, possible remedies and go through the chain of command, and then I've even had whistleblowers come to me and for advice, and so I say all that just to give a little backdrop to this use of opportunity cost as a phrase. I've watched some things and thought, well, all of the, you know, opportunity cost is the value of the choice foregone. The value of the choice foregone. So there was a choice in the beginning in many of these situations that would have resolved it. And that's very valuable in terms of there was time lost, there was productivity lost, there was morale lost. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
As well as out of maybe out-of-pocket lawyer fees on both sides. I mean, who knows? But to me, that is always so wasteful when in many of these situations, it was obvious that something at the beginning, and I'm really talking about in large organizations where I see this, you know, real inefficiency. I mean, a lot of large organizations, as you know, have whistleblower hotlines. You can call with, well, presumably with anonymity. They use ombuds. And in the institution I work in, I saw three ombuds installed at a very high level. And things have gotten better, you know, because employees have some place to go to talk with someone who can show them the ropes. Or, I mean, it's amazing the situations I've seen from a distance where just someone from the organization who's an ombudsman or ombuds who is supposed to be impartial, but I think a lot of times they are on the side of the employee because the power, there's such an, you know, a power imbalance. But that ombuds can just sit in the room. And I've heard that the behavior of the perpetrator, let's just,
yeah, changes dramatically.
Oh, man. And so when I was doing some research last year, I was seeing that the trend was to put that ombuds, the office of the ombuds, to report right to the CEO and just cut out the rest of that chain of command, which can be a real problem in not getting relief for the person who's complaining. I mean, all this is kind of far afield from Carol's situation. But when this kind of situation occurs in a large-scale organization, I think there's actually there could have been more protection in some situations.
Oh, certainly, certainly.
If there had been if it had been a state institution or you know, one with a certain HR policies, you know, I need not go into all that because it's just pretty obvious. But this oral surgeon, I do accept that possibility, slim as it is, that he was trying to help her. I hadn't thought of that. I don't know what that says about me, but I hadn't thought of that. But on the other hand, I'm often just surprised as all get out when people, large or small organizations, open their mouths or put something out there that ends up scrutinized by the public that didn't even need to be there. So I always wonder about that. If it's just kind of this, I think you use the word privilege and you've used the word hubris tonight, and I wonder if it just doesn't come from that free-to-choose mindset, at least some of it.
I think it comes from the sort of brainwashing that takes place when big lie theory is put in play. You know, the theory of the big lie is that if you tell a lie often enough, it will eventually be perceived as truth.
Goebbels or Hitler.
Yeah,
well, I think we're seeing that play out. I drove to Salina, Kansas yesterday to meet my mother and sister. They were coming from Hayes, and my niece was coming from Lawrence, so we just all met in Salina. I don't do that very often. And 5 minutes into the conversation, my sister makes a very derisive comment about, well, in our single-payer system. And so I was just like, this is what's on Fox now, you know? And my mother was kicking her under the table, so that's all I have to report. Because we all know how to shut that down.
Yeah. There are ways of shutting that thing down, yes.
My mother will shut it down, 86 years old, and she just, I mean, because there's, I mean, there's single payer. I mean, where did that come from? My niece and I were talking in the parking lot afterwards, and there's a lot of love in my family, and I don't need to go into any of that anymore. But because my niece graduated from KU last spring, and that's Lawrence, Kansas.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a progressive little spot that it is in Kansas. I believe it was founded by people from Massachusetts who wanted to found a city based on justice and human rights. I'm 90% sure that statement is right. And at any rate, she was like, she was just shaking her head. And I said, well, you know, until Dad's dying day, which was 2 years ago, I said he was trying to get me to listen to Rush Limbaugh. And no big deal, I just said, you know, no, never, and he laughed and all that. But my niece said, she said, I had to listen to that in the car growing up all the time. She said, I was so mad. So it's interesting. How did she have that in her ears all the time growing up and come out on the other side of it?
Well, I think there are fairly obvious answers to that. Well, among them being the idea that even if you blare it constantly, if you have the kind of mentality that or you've been taught well enough to challenge. You know, think critically, it can't survive. The only way that you can have your mind ruined by right-wing broadcasting is if you are sort of a tabula rasa.
Mm-hmm.
And
white sheet, huh?
Yeah. And
white sponge mind.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that I used to argue all the time about the necessity of so-called progressive media is that you know, you cannot, if there's only one football team out on the playing field, there's only one football team to root for.
Yeah.
That's what we had in this country for a very, very long time, and still largely have. Now, there's been a blossoming of progressive media on the internet. And I'm proud of the fact that the Horn is an early, you know, is an early entry into that. You know,
yeah.
we don't have a million members of the Horn family commune, but it's still a pretty, it's a nice little community. But you know, whether it's Sam Cedar or Malloy or Rick Smith, Dr. Bill is doing his part from an educational standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
There are other people out there who are doing this stuff. And at least that provides a little bit of competition, because most of the stuff is fairly easily deconstructed. I mean, not to take us too far afield, but just as an example, I just saw a news story a little bit ago that tomorrow, Tuesday, because this is such a good idea, Dick Cheney. Is going to have a little sit-down tete-a-tete with the House Republicans on how to deal with those head-lopping barbarians from ISIL.
Oh, not from The Onion. This is not from The Onion.
No, this is from The Washington Post. I mean,
he sits down with House Republicans. He and his heart of...
He and some decent human being's heart, yes.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing is, they're only doing this because President Obama is expected to announce his strategy on Wednesday. You know, the strategy that everybody from Maureen Dowd to the right wing to elements of the DLC, Blue Dog Democratic, whatever, have said, you know, what do you mean you don't have a strategy?
Yeah.
And of course, Dick Cheney's going to teach him how to come out and call him a tan suit wearing sissy man who wants to have a psychological sensitivity session with people who cut off heads. But again, I just have to throw in this plug for Dr. Bill. You know, we have this running joke about how he'll sit there and he'll talk about things and it's all so pleasant. And then the next thing you know, he's walking back behind you with the axe handle and whack.
Yeah.
And he did that today, and it was a beautiful moment. Because somehow or another, he verged over into talking, well, he started out talking about a quote from James Madison about what war and a constant state of war does to any hopes of having a republic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's brilliant. But he went from there to talking about the execution of Charles II and the rise of Cromwell and the power of Parliament. And, of course, Charles II was executed by beheading.
Yeah.
And then the axe handle came out when Dr. Bill said, and we need to remember that these people who were cutting off heads in the Middle East, they learned from the best. They learned from us.
Whoosh. There it is.
He shoots, he scores.
Yep. Yeah.
But all of these things, you know, to return to sort of the previous point, if one is willing to engage in critical analysis of all of this stuff, it can't stand. It only works if you are authoritarianly bent and are so uninterested in engaging in critical thought that you just want to be told what to think.
In this case, I mean, this is not a show about my family, but the other niece is just a year older and is, you know, the other way. Same mother, same everything, you know. So, I don't know.
She got one more year of it.
Well, and she's still out in Hayes, but I think that's just a little flip on my part. There are people in Hayes that know the score, And I shouldn't paint Hayes. I don't know Hayes much. I don't know the city, but I think there are Democrats there because my sister has registered independent because she wants to have some sway over the Democrats that Hayes elects to city council. So just that information tells me that that city government is either up for grabs or tense.
Well, and ultimately, Diane, we have to reach a philosophical or dialectic space, I guess, where we decide whether or not there's any hope. And sometimes, and there was a great article in Orion Magazine a while back about this guy who says, you know, I'm giving up hoping. I'm quitting hoping. I don't hope. Because, you know, if you sit around hoping, nothing gets done. But the question is, can this stuff be fixed? And I guess there's a little bit of an optimist left in me that thinks that, yes, it can. This is, after all, the country that went to the moon, and I don't want the emails from the deniers.
Yeah.
And this is the country that came up with Medicare and Social Security, imperfect though it may be. This is the country that survived, that managed to survive as long as it has with only one civil war, and mostly has a peaceful transfer of power. This is a country that has been known to actually think about the well-being of all of its citizens from time to time.
And that's at certain junctures where the, you know, the certain alignments come together, right?
Yeah. Most of the good stuff only happens in very narrow windows.
Yeah.
And then the reactionary right spends a generation trying to tear it apart.
Apparently. You know, that reminds me, I get a news, I get an email, kind of letter from William Bloom once a month. And it's called, he's the author of Rogue State.
Yes.
And he used to work in the State Department, and I corresponded with him just a little bit. And that first one I saw it's an email newsletter, that's what it is. When I first saw the title of it, Killing Hope, I had a visceral reaction, like recoil.
Yes.
But then it didn't take me too long to think, gotta happen. I mean, the kind of thing he's talking about, killing hope, his phrase, as far as I can tell, has to do with killing hope that if we do the same thing again, we'll get a different outcome.
Right, or sitting around and hoping as opposed to doing.
Yeah.
You know, there's that famous verse from the book of James that the right-wing religion industry prefers to forget about, where it says faith without works is dead.
Yeah.
And it's the same principle. You can sit around and believe that Jesus loved the poor, but until you're out there trying to do something to make the life of the present poor better, then your faith is dead.
Yeah.
And so
through action.
Yeah.
I've kind of forgotten all the Bible I've ever read, but now
good for
you and the Lord, I'm remembering more of it because, ironically, which is fine in combating the propaganda, you're holding up a mirror, which is very useful. They say this, they do this, if you follow what I mean.
Yes.
And it is pretty profound at every juncture that the right wing claims to, I don't know, do they still, well, maybe they don't claim to love and help the poor. I don't know anymore. I can't tell. And I don't care. I don't even care what they believe in or say, but it seems to me to be profoundly hypocritical or selective. Both.
Yeah, I opt for both. I really
do.
Yeah,
it's not, dichotomies are easy to set up, but very rarely are they.
But you know, just to go all the way back to the original question, Diane.
Yeah.
Would it be the end of the republic as we know it to sit down, and maybe that would be a good thing, to sit down and craft a law that says that there's a social safety net and we're not going to let anybody fall through? That if you happen to work for an asshat who fires you for getting cancer, that maybe, just maybe, just maybe, we'll take care, we'll do some income support. Because, see, let's assume, and this is, you know, this is the essential problem. Let's assume for a moment, and it's a broad assumption, that she's got adequate health care, that she's not going to have any issues in dealing with this health care side of this existential crisis in which she finds herself. Yeah. Well, the reason those ads run on TV with that duck that walks around is because there's a great big insurance company whose sole purpose in life is to take in premiums and then penuriously pay out scant benefits for income support. That's what that company does. But I ask the question, why should that be part of the profit motive?
Oh, it shouldn't. It's so
why
obvious.
Should why should we not have, as Robert described from Australia, why should we not have automatic availability of payments for so you can keep, I mean, cancer, really? Last I checked, nutrition is important.
You know.
But at $1 a day on food stamps, Diane, you can kiss good nutrition goodbye. I'm guessing here, but I doubt if three bowls of top ramen per day are going to qualify as the nutrition you need to battle cancer.
Well, and there's a whole discussion of how, you know, we're getting cancer in the first place. I mean, you know, our food, our environment, it's all... Well, here's what I have thought for quite a while. I did a master's in economics at one time, and I'm mentioning that because and at that time, I had to take 3 days of comps in Marxist theory, neoclassical, classical Keynesian, money and banking, blah, 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 blah. By the time I was done, there were so many theories floating in the air. You know, I could see each one had a different assumption, a different internal logic, led to different conclusions, blah, 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 blah. And I was forever grateful for that training, which happened at University of Missouri, Kansas City, which just had, to me, an incredible, I mean, they had a flight of scholars from Germany at one time, you know?
Yeah.
That, Abel Lerner and others that kind of shaped an interesting, interesting social science experience there. The reason I'm mentioning that is the most conservative economic theory I learned accepted the reason for public goods. It was very, very simple. They would be undersupplied if left to the private sector. You know, because there's, you know, for instance, there are spillover benefits to education. There are spillover benefits to having a I-70 run through the country, et cetera. But if left to the private sector, there'll be an under-allocation of resources to them.
Yes,
and
because you've got to because you've got to take care of the shareholders.
Well, yeah, and not only that. Well, I mean,
and Dennis,
economists didn't even go that far. They just, well, yeah, because on their level of abstraction, you know, they're just, right, you're right. In today's economy, that seems painfully obvious. But to the economists, it's just that, you know, there are spillover benefits to public education or public health that we won't get if left to the private sector. It takes collective action. And blah, blah, blah. You know, and what has been so surprising to me is that nobody talks about public goods that way, and that came out of a very conservative economic model. So I'm looking at the situation today thinking we can't even have a – meaning we, the, you know, the whole culture seems to be –
You mean us more perfect union folks?
No. Yeah, the irony is so thick. You know, you can cut it with a knife. But when did we, you know, the propaganda, I guess, that persuaded a lot of people not to even recognize public goods. you know, the nature of public goods. And, you know,
well,
economists always put them off to the side and talked about them differently.
Well, that, you know, that's why, Diane, that I started last year about this time trying for all that my little heart was worth to convey the notion that things like the government shutdown and the sequester are actually symptoms of an open insurgency.
Yes.
Because they're there to be found on a variety of television channels now and in a lot of different places on the interweb tubes. There are assertions to be found. Oh, dear. I think I just lost Diane. Dang gummit. That public anything is no longer is a bad thing. That the commons are bad. I don't know what happened to our call. And if any of this stuff that we're talking about is going to be remedied, it's only going to be remedied after we get back to the notion that there are some things that the people do for themselves that the profit makers don't have any business in. I mean, there are just some places where the door should be closed and barred and locked and chairs propped under the doorknob to keep the profit takers out. Things like health care, things like potable drinking water, things like income support. Why should some executive at the end of the year get a Christmas bonus based on how little income support his company designed to pay income support has not paid out? Is that you? Are you back, Diane?
Yeah, I had called back. I didn't. I know your program's almost over, but I don't know. We got disconnected. But
yeah,
I'm hearing your point.
Betsy,
point you made when I was on the line was that you were a few months ago calling attention to the insurrection.
Yeah. And that insurrection takes the form of an open and vicious assault on the idea of, and you know, it's just a rubric, the commons.
Yeah, the tragedy of the commons.
Bingo.
Nobody's
yeah.
ever taught them that.
Yeah. And you know, Betsy just pointed out, you know, things like public schooling. You know, look at the rise of these miserable dodges called charter schools.
Oh my God.
And vouchers for schools where children can go and learn that Adam and Eve rode to church on a dinosaur.
Oh my God!
And that stuff, you know, that stuff.
Those programs. It's. Do you know the Detroit Free Press is? I don't know if they're still doing a series of articles on charter schools in their midst. But I interviewed with the Detroit Free Press on one of those articles and. And you know how reporters have to tell you a lot of facts before you'll comment, you know? By the time the reporter got, and she was reading verified documents to me, my head was spinning. I could barely comment on the graft, the nepotism, the waste of taxpayer dollars. It's real bad.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I don't think it's bad in every case, but I mean, and this is in the public domain. I'm not telling tales out of school. When a reporter goes off the record, then I don't talk about that. You know, you've commented on that. But she was talking about how a husband and wife team would hire the brother-in-law for janitorial service at a no-bid contract, and she was telling me the cost of it, and it's bad. I mean, bad.
Yeah. And it's bad by design.
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
as bad as things are, imagine a day when the right wing gets its way, Diane.
Imagine
America without Social Security. Imagine America without Medicare. Imagine America without Medicaid. Imagine America without unemployment insurance, without workers' compensation, without food stamps. Because every last one of these things is a fervent dream of the right wing in this country.
In your estimation, haven't you said the year 2020 could be that could be the point where it all goes?
Well, no. What I've said in the past is that the first realistic chance we get at taking back the Congress is actually 2022.
I see. I had that wrong. Because, so that would be our chance.
The next census comes in 2020. And so there will be a round of redistricting. And the first election where potential post-2020 census redistricting will be in play is 2022. What just scares me wet is the idea of how much damage these vandals can do between now and then. And I go back to to what Ron and Raleigh said earlier, because I think it's very real. What really, really motivates these people, A, they hate the idea generally, but, you know, the Republicans can live with Social Security as long as white people are getting it. The Republicans can live with welfare as long as white people are getting it. The Republicans can live with unemployment and aid to families with dependent children as long as white people are getting it.
Yeah.
But the demographic shift that's coming.
I heard that first from Sandra, and I thought, you know, I bet you anything that's right.
I'm certain of it.
Yeah, I am too. Once I heard it, I was like,
So what they have to do, Diane, is they have to tear it all the way to the ground and destroy it.
And then give pieces to the churches or... You know, what a horror show.
Or, best of all, Wall Street.
Oh.
But they got to make sure that those people don't get it. Because, you know, they'll just build, it's like Ron and Raleigh said, they'll just build hammocks.
Hammocks, yeah. Yeah. Well, until the night I heard Sandra say that, I had not grasped that. In all my years of living in this country, I guess, you know, it's like a fish in water. I just had not thought that that was a motivation.
Well, let's. I mean, it's.
No,
it's,
I completely believe.
And once you look at the background of things, it really comes into sharp focus. Let's remember that domestic workers who were largely people, women of color, and men, were left out of the origins of Social Security.
Wow.
So too, I think were farm workers. Were they not?
I don't know, but. What you said is telling. Yeah. Never meant for them, huh?
Right. And of course, you know, you there's nothing more just transparently racist as to hear or see a right-winger inveighing against the war on poverty. Well, the war on poverty's 40 years old, and look here, we still got poverty. Well, hell, how old's the war on drugs, and we still got drugs?
You know, this is the time of night where I go get my iPad tablet out and go to Amazon Video and watch Star Trek Next Generation. Because, you know, it's like, fast forward, we're over this. Data, the android, has a real good ethics program. I love watching him figure out.
I'm just curious. Well, if you're a sci-fi fan, have you watched Firefly?
No.
Oh, Diane, you owe yourself Firefly.
I like Doctor Who, kind of. I like Star Trek Next Generation a lot. I'm watching
Deep Space Nine.
I like that.
It's very.
Shapeshifter guy.
Yeah. Firefly is a Joss Whedon thing, and Fox only let it have one season, and it could have gone for a dozen.
I'm writing this down. Okay.
Yeah, it's really a delight. It's the smart.
So it just had one season.
Yeah, it's the smartest space opera that's been done in a very long time, in my opinion.
Space opera? Did you say space opera?
Yeah.
Do they sing?
No. I mean that's a term that the creator of Star Trek, the original creator of Star Trek, came up with because you know old westerns were referred to as horse operas.
Oh, I didn't know. I missed all that for some reason.
And you know soap operas are soap operas, so this is a space opera.
I'm missing the obvious here. Yeah. Okay, well, you've just...
Gene Roddenberry. I was about to go out and buy the medicine. Gene Roddenberry. Okay, I think he coined the term space opera.
Well, you know, it's just very comforting to be placed in the 24th century and hear, you know, the captain say, well, humans used to do that kind of stuff, but they got
But we got over it, right.
We got over it.
But the funny thing, and the funny thing for me, since, you know, this is the obligatory Star Trek reference.
Yeah.
For me, the funny thing is that, especially with the original Star Trek series, there are back references to the conflagrations of warfare and, you know, real problems that we went through to get up to, you know, to the point where James T. Kirk could wait for the green woman to say, what is this kissing, James Kirk? Give me another of these kisses. I'm trying to be funny. It's pathetic. The funny thing is, you know, one of the most obvious back references to that is when Khan gets thawed out.
Oh.
And of course, Ricardo Montalban was at the height of his genius. And, but the thing is, you know what? Looking at Khan, and maybe I'll get some pushback. I don't know. They were trying, the writer of that episode was trying to come up with, you know, what would a superhuman, genetically engineered Superman, you know, an Uberman, look like? And he comes up with Khan and all the other, you know, all the other genetically modified humans.
Gosh.
But you know what?
That's distressing.
I don't think... Stand Ricardo Montalban as Khan right next to Charles and David Koch and see who you'd prefer. That's what I'm getting at.
Well, if you put it that way, everything's relative, yeah. Right. I really got into Star Trek Next Generation without getting into the first series much. You know, the Shatner thing.
Oh, well, you know, I was just... I started watching it as a child.
Well, worth it.
And have been with it. And, you know, Star Trek Voyager didn't speak to me. I didn't get anything out of that.
I haven't gotten into that yet.
Deep Space Nine.
I do like the Vulcan stuff.
Yeah.
You know, reasonable people.
Absolutely. And you know, they're cousins to the Romulans. Romulans.
Remember that episode where Worf was trying to teach the young about their real Romulan heritage?
I
don't know what I'd do without Star Trek.
Well, because when you get a few spare minutes, check out Firefly.
Okay. I get, you know, you were talking about how Fox canned it, and I think I mixed up.
It does a better job of quickly establishing the parameters of its own future universe than I think any other science fiction show I've ever seen.
Oh, because sometimes you have to wait till the series really improves to get clarity on stuff like that.
No, they were up and running. It was wonderful, and everybody loved it, except, you know, the viewers stayed away in droves.
Oh, Well, didn't they keep Star Trek on despite a? I think they have to give the audience a chance, don't you?
Well, yeah, but this is not 1967. Star Trek at least had 3 years out of its 5-year mission.
Yeah. I will look that up. Firefly. I surely will, Bob.
Well, I'll be interested in your response. Hey, Diane, it's been a lovely conversation.
Yeah.
You have a wonderful evening and a wonderful tomorrow.
Okay, thank you, Bob. Good night.
Bye now. And time to get out of here. Thanks to everybody who helped us reach tonight's fundraising goal. It really does help when we get out and when we don't dig a hole every evening. So thanks, everyone, one and all. Tried to mention everybody by name, and so thank you. You know who you are. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to John Fox. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW. .net and ACHEACT.org. Back tomorrow with Titanic Tuesday. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.